So, once upon a time in Dwarka, Lord Krishna had a desire. That desire was to taste his own sweetness. He was going past some water, I believe, some water, and he seen his reflection in the water. So he was attracted to himself. He seen his own beauty, and he was shocked at just how beautiful he was. This is a strange thing. If we look at ourselves and we think that we're very beautiful, we're termed to have a narcissus complex. So Lord Krishna had this. He's the original root of everything. So Lord Krishna had this idea. He wanted to taste his own beauty, but he knew he couldn't do it from the position he was in, because he was understanding he was Krishna. So a desire sprung up in the Lord, and that desire was, how can I taste my own sweetness? And as he was contemplated, Krishnadas Kaviraj is mentioning in the beginning of this Chaitanya Charitamrita, this information. So as he was contemplating, he understood that only Radharani can give him the pleasure that he wants to taste. This pleasure is because Radharani has unadulterated love for Lord Krishna. So therefore, this understanding of Krishna Prema came into the Lord's mind. This understanding of how can I, as a Supreme Personality of Godhead, taste love for myself. So we understand the story where the Lord entered into Radharani's body, and he came out the other side in a golden color. So this golden color, we know the verse Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Brindavaneshwari. So this Tapta Kanchana, this golden color of Radharani, Gaurangi, it's that way the color is according to Radharani's heart. So the melded condition of Radharani is that she has Krishna Prema. And this color of Krishna Prema is golden. Therefore, we find that the Indians, actually, who live in the vicinity of the Lord's abode, where the Lord often takes his birth in India, we understand this. Sometimes he takes birth on the heavenly planets also. So Indians have this golden complexion. So the golden complexion is a reflection of their inner self. Whatever you are internally, that's reflected externally in the body. So when the body is feeling some closeness to Krishna, some connection with Krishna, externally that's manifesting in a certain way. So in the case of Lord Chaitanya, it manifested as this golden color in relation to Radharani's love. So there we have the descent of Lord Chaitanya in the golden color. So when the Lord came to the earth planet, we find that he came to taste love of Godhead and then distribute it. So the Sankirtan movement that the Lord came to inaugurate, this Yuga Dham of chanting the Maha Mantra, which is a path to attain perfection, it was a secondary thing. It isn't the primary thing. The primary thing that the Lord came to teach was to test love of Godhead, Krishna Prema. So how do we test Krishna Prema? It's only available on one path. That path has been termed as spontaneous attraction to the Lord. We understand this as Raga Nuga Bhakti. So the Bhakti is the devotion to the Lord, and the Raga part is in relation to your service to the Lord as a lover. So it's been explained in the scriptures that a person who attains Krishna Prema, love of Godhead, they never ever descend to the material world. So we might wonder, how are we here in the material world? How are we forgetful of our identity as spirit souls if it mentions in the Bhagavatam, etc., that a person who has love of Godhead never falls? So this indicates that every person in the material world, save and except a few exceptional acharyas that come, none of us have ever had love of Godhead. So no person that we see has ever tasted Krishna prema. So in our natural occupations as spirit souls, Lord Chaitanya explains that our duty is jiva-svarupa nitya Krishna das. It's eternally a servant of Lord Krishna. So we've always been serving the Lord in the spiritual world, but we've never actually gave the highest love to the Lord. Because we've never had it, then he's never tasted it in relation to us. When I heard this news, I was absolutely shocked. I would like to have cried, but I'm so hard-hearted that I couldn't. But I was amazed that I've never actually given the Lord the right kind of pleasure that he wants. So you can imagine, we're eternal. We've eternally been living life. We're not born and dying. We've just been living life according to our eternal occupation. And we've never actually tasted love of Godhead. If we did, we would never leave the spiritual world. So now we've reached a grandiose position where we are classed as the most fallen of all sinful rascals. Because of that, we have somehow qualified for Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So in this verse, we pay our obeisances to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who are like the sun and the moon, who've arisen on the horizon of Gaudadesh. So this Gaudadesh, it's a very special place, in that it's a place where love of Godhead is tasted. There are some pastimes in the Bhagavatam, which explain how Radharani created Vrindavan, and how she pleased Lord Krishna so much that Lord Krishna said, this place is called Nava Vrindavan. This became Nava Dweep, nine islands. So in this place, the Lord eternally stays and plays pastimes of love. Here in this place, he's playing with the gopis, and there's gopas in different areas. And this is the pastime that the Lord entered into and out of as Gauranga. He entered through Radharani's body in this mood and came out. So when Radharani is serving the Lord, her heart is eternally welling up with the feelings of Krishna prema. Lord Chaitanya came, the first part of his teachings, the first part of his life, was to display the path to attain Krishna prema. That path is to chant the Maha Mantra in congregation. So there is, I'll slightly veer off the track and I'll mention something. There is a certain mystic path called the mystic Kabbalah. This is the path of the Jewish people in relation to mystic yoga. So this was the original path of Jesus Christ. And on this path, they have certain trees to attain higher destinations. Srila Prabhupada mentions that the universe is structured like a tree. So that tree is the tree of yoga. And there are three paths. There's Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. So on the path of Karma Yoga, you can reach a certain height in the universe. When you go to each level in the universe, according to your qualification within your heart, according to the development of your conscious intellect, and according to the melded condition of your heart, how much compassion you have for other living entities, you can go to a certain height in the universe. And then there are gatekeepers. And you cannot pass beyond the gatekeepers according to where your visa tells you you can go to. So Srila Prabhupada mentioned about the moon planet, that it's a heavenly planet, and you can't go there without a visa. So Lord Indra, he mentions in the Bhagavatam that any person who tries to go to heaven by mechanical means, he'll send them to the gates of hell. He'll send them down to the lower regions, and he won't allow them in. On the path of Gyan Yoga, you can go a little higher than the lower heavens. You can go much further up. You can even go to the four planets above the material continuation. And then when you reach Brahmaloka, you can attain liberation from there. However, again, there are guardians, and you can only go to the place where your consciousness has evolved to. So on the path of Bhakti Yoga, it's a central path. You can go all the way up to the spiritual world. So you can imagine that we've been in the spiritual world, but we've never been to Krishna Loka. None of us have ever been to Goloka Vrindavan, and none of us have actually been in the spiritual planets and serving the Lord out of love. If we serve the Lord out of love, we don't come back. We never leave the spiritual world. It's said very clearly in Shastra this. So there is a certain mysterious yoga path in this Kabbalah, in this mystic Kabbalah. And they understand this path. They get their information also from sages from the past, from Moses and Isaiah and all these Abraham and all these elders that came down and give all their books, Adam and Eve and all the rest of the people. So they have one path that's been handed down, and they don't understand anything about this path. They say that it's the highest path of all. It's a path to perfection. They understand that on this path, there are no gatekeepers whatsoever stopping you attaining perfection. They also understand that it's called the path of congregation. They write this in their scriptures. They say that it's a highest path to perfection, and it's a path of congregation. But other than this, we don't have the faintest idea what it is. It's the most mystical tree that they have. Can you imagine? This is from the beginning of their history books, from the beginning of their prophets and their time, they've had this information. And right up to this date, they have zero information beyond that. They have so much technical information on every path. So we understand via Shastra that Mother Saraswati, she covered the eyes of the scholars. In relation to Lord Gauranga, his coming was always prophesied. We understand that the Harinam Sankirtan movement is the path of congregational chanting. Congregation means everybody must get together and glorify the Lord out of love. Yeah? We're not doing this as a business deal. We do our devotional service because we love Lord Krishna. And when we love Lord Krishna, then we're engaging in the Sankirtan movement. At that point, we're chanting the Maha Mantra. So until that time, there is a path called Vaidhi Bhakti. On the Vaidhi Bhakti path, you follow the rules and regulations, and as your heart gets purified, you learn to understand and connect the feelings of love. You learn to resonate with the feelings that are within your heart, with the deity you see, with the pastimes you read. You become very soft and melted condition. You become golden inside your heart. So this path of perfection, what they know nothing of, we have it. We're on this path. And the reason that there is no gatekeeper stopping anyone is because all the demigods, Indra and Shiva and Narada Muni and all the Gandhavas, they're all singing and dancing in kirtan. They're too busy to stop anyone because they've all got cartels and madangas. It's mentioned that in the spiritual world, when Lord Chaitanya took on a male form, all the gopis, they've seen the Lord, and they said, "Wow, what can we do now? What can we do to serve you?" Because they understand, we love the Lord, and we want to serve also. So they immediately manifested male forms. They immediately got madangas and cartels, and they came to Navadvip. And then they started propagating the path to attain Krishna Prema. So this was Lord Chaitanya's first, this was his first teaching. Then he had a second teaching. That second teaching is that he locked himself away in a gambira, which was an extremely small room. And in that room, with four walls and nothing special, he renounced the whole world, and in a pining mood of separation, the Lord chanted the Maha Mantra and entered into pastimes of the Lord. So this is teaching this spontaneous attraction in the mood of raga. So devotees must understand that this path we're on is not the path of Vaidhi Bhakti. It's a path of Raganuga Bhakti, but it must be attained through Vaidhi. So there are levels of Vaidhi. One of the levels is you come, you get inspired, you start chanting. After that, you go through the Anatta Nivritti stage when you're chanting. So this Anatta Nivritti stage means you don't commit offenses to the Lord's devotees. So this is very important because this Harinam Sankirtan movement we're in, it is a reflection of Goloka Vrindavan. Because in Goloka Vrindavan, they're doing the Harinam around Radha and Krishna. We also are doing Harinam here around Radha and Krishna. So when we're performing Harinam Sankirtan, we must understand that we're in a training ground for Goloka Vrindavan. In Goloka Vrindavan, only two things are happening. They're glorifying the Lord and they're having relationships with each other. Everything is rasa. The idea of tattva is thrown out the window. The Lord has so many opportunities to be worshipped in a grandiose mood of awe and reverence. And this may give him pleasure to some level, but when it comes to the highest level possible, he wants to taste only relationship. So if there's some conflict in the relationship here, that same conflict will manifest in Goloka Vrindavan. Therefore, you can't go to Goloka Vrindavan because there is no conflict. Everything is harmonious there. The reason the time is conspicuous by its absence in the spiritual world is that everything is centered around the Lord, around the Lord's pleasure. In the material world, when we have this egocentric view, then we think we are the bodies. So we think the universe revolves around us, and this allows us to perform activity and then own that activity as our own. Whatever sinful activity is performed by the body because of desire, that activity must be owned by the person who owns the body, which is you in your false sense when you think you are the body. So because of this, there is a law of gravity in the universe. And this law of gravity is also called the integrating law within the universe. So this is Sankarshan, and another word for the integrating law is the law of karma, the law of cause and effect. So gravity is not a spiritual thing, it's only a material thing. There is no karma in the spiritual world. So because there's no karma in the spiritual world, every person is engaging in their activity without degradation. So according to the understanding Srila Prabhupada gives about the law of gravity, he states that Krishna's manifestation within an object allows something to float or to sink. So when you have more Krishna in your body, you rise up to the heavenly planets. And when you have absolute Krishna, you go up beyond this material world, beyond the law of cause and effect, action and reaction, beyond the counterpart of that, which is the history, going back to Sankarshan at the bottom of the universe. And then you transcend these laws. So at that time, time itself doesn't have the potency to take your life, because time itself is fire. You also become fire when you become as potent as the Lord. And at that time, fire can't burn fire. So time itself has no jurisdiction over you at that point. So when we're understanding that our path of Vaidhi entails serving the devotees in a mood of love, getting trained up. When you're trained up here, then you can go to either Gokul and be trained up further, or you can go directly to Goloka. So in Gokul, it's still classed the spiritual world, but it's the manifestation of the spiritual world here. So when you have any lingering traces of sin, something you need to be worked upon, that's the perfect place where you can work upon these anattas. So in that instance, Srila Prabhupada mentioned, then we can go back to Godhead if we are, I've heard, 80% perfect. Some people say 75, they like to stretch it a little more. So in this instance, we can go to Gokul, and we can then be born in a family of devotees, Vaishnava devotees, with Krishna's presence there. Everyone in Gokul, even though they might not have direct connection with Krishna, they all hear about Krishna. Gokul is a very, very big place. There are hundreds of thousands of millions of cows, so there must be a lot of people to look after these cows. Then every person knows about Lord Krishna there. So by knowing about Lord Krishna and by being engaged in the culture of Krishna consciousness, you then don't do anything wrong. As you don't do anything wrong and you think about Krishna, at the time of death then you go to Goloka Vrindavan. So through this movement you can attain Krishna Prema. This is very important. However, that entails a very scientific process of chanting the Maha Mantra. So last night I spoke in the Soho Street temple. I spoke for the last three nights. The first night we were scheduled to speak on atomic time and greater time, which is a Mahatattva. And that seminar lasted, I went a little over time and then there was questions, so it went a little over, maybe another hour over. And then the next night we spoke about space, we spoke about the geometry of space, and the law of gravity, and how these things interrelate, time and space together. And that night, nobody wanted to go home, and it went on till 10 o'clock, and there was double the amount of people there because they were telling their friends. So then the last night, we related time, space with transcendence, with chanting the Maha Mantra. And we discussed the scientific explanation of how we chant the Maha Mantra. What is the wind-down process that we have in the body, and how that wind-down process, when you process information from the conscious realms, when you're going to sleep, how that same process goes on while you're chanting the Maha Mantra. How we can stop this process, and how we can put all the information we have, churn it into one point so we can focus on serving the Lord out of love. So that particular seminar last night, that one went on till 11 o'clock. So the doors, they close at 10, but still nobody would leave. There was just as many in the class at the end as there was at the beginning, and you couldn't move in the room. So this told me that, and they weren't actually, a lot of these people weren't the resident devotees. They were just people off the street in London, you know. They'd been coming, but they were, and some of them were actually new. And one person came there the first night, and she was an archaeologist. And then the second night she comes, she had tilak on. I was amazed in one day of the transformation. So these people were hungry to understand about anything in relation to Krishna. And I see sometimes that our internal devotees, who should be trying to get as much knowledge as possible for Krishna, they're not as hungry for knowledge, specifically when it's scientific knowledge. They take it very blasé, and they think to themselves, well, I'm a devotee of Krishna, so everything's okay. But are you really chanting the Maha Mantra? Are you really attaining love of Godhead? Are you really going through your anatta nivritti stage? Have you reached the stage of steadiness, nistha? Do you have ruchi? Do you have taste for the Lord? Have you got to the bhava stage where you have these preliminary loving feelings for the Lord? Have you got to the five stages of remembrances where you go to finally your apanadas, where you inherit your spiritual body? You know, are you actually doing these things because you're supposed to? When we have knowledge, Shisharad Landaneshwara Ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shkonitai Ki Jai. (Clears throat) In the universe, knowledge is descending from Brahma Loka to the sun planet. And then Surya Narayan, he traverses his orbit. He goes round the universe in both a clockwise direction and an anti-clockwise direction. So he goes two ways at the same time. Every other planet in the universe, except for a few distinct luminaries, they're going in a clockwise direction around the pole star, which is the central pivot of stillness. As you go around the pole star, you meet knowledge, which is descending in an anti-clockwise direction. So as time marches forwards, knowledge comes backwards, you have an opportunity to attain knowledge at every moment. However, there is a trade-off for this. And that trade-off is that every time you have an opportunity to attain knowledge and go further forwards, you lose a moment of your life. So Prabhupada said that the purpose of the sun planet was to remove 24 hours of your life every time it rises in the morning. So at the same time, the sun planet, it gives off heat and light. Within the heat and light is impersonal knowledge. Yeah, this impersonal potency of the Lord, it allows you to be able to access further knowledge, which is encoded in the ether. So around everybody is the sound vibration Omkara. This Om, you know this? In the beginning of time, the three letters A-U-M, Lord Brahma created the three worlds from this. Om, Bhu, Bhuva, Svaha. So he created the three universes from these three letters. And enclosed in every level of the universe is a certain amount of knowledge. Therefore, we understand the gatekeepers are on each level. So you can attain a specific amount of knowledge as you go forwards through time. And that's given by the sun god who travels anti-clockwise. And as you're pushed forwards by the Dakshinavrita wind, the sun god, he's coming backwards and he literally sheds his body. The wind literally pushes the sun planet against the sun planet, and his body, the rays of his light and heat, they disperse all over the universe. So the sun is literally giving up his life just to serve everybody, just to give everybody that opportunity to attain knowledge. But because the universe always strives for homeostasis, always strives for balance, then the same thing must happen to you. Because you have an ability to take that knowledge, because the Lord allows you to access that knowledge, then you must lose your life accordingly. Just as the sun loses its life, you also lose your life. So we should be careful with every moment of time. Every time we have a desire in life, that desire removes a certain amount of our potency. That potency, that strength, is there for a reason. It's there to illuminate the chitta, the consciousness, the intellect. So when you have a desire, the moment you have a thought to attain something, whatever it is, you must lose a certain amount of potency. Inside your heart, you have the soul and the super soul. So they're eternal, and they're eternal light. Surrounding them is five types of air. So these five types of air, they're either compressing on the Lord, or they're expanding and giving space to the Lord. And the amount that the Lord is present, the amount of room that the Lord is given to manifest his potency, that much you will be free from the laws of karma, from the laws of gravity putting pressure on your body. When you allow the Lord more space to move by being in harmony with the Lord, at that point you'll take the position of a demigod and you'll be a representative of the Lord and you'll be able to do a lot more things. So Srila Prabhupada mentioned the axiom, simple living, high thinking. This is a very, very important thing to understand, because the demons who are quite nicely controlling the earth planet, how they control the populace is they give unlimited commercial items so that everybody will have a desire to attain that item. When you have a desire, a certain amount of the light within your heart is removed. And that light, that potency, then is manifested externally and becomes, from the electromagnetic energy, becomes the item that you're desiring. Then to keep it there, because the law of entropy in the universe states that everything degrades, so to keep it there, you must expel a certain amount of energy. You know, you have this big mana, and it takes a lot of maintenance to keep it. So there's a lot of energy expelled to keep your desires manifest. So the more desires you have, the more you're expelling your energy, and this is supposed to empower your left brain, your intellect. And when you just keep desiring more and more and more, the deficit, when you move something from one place to another, there is a deficit there. So there actually is a vacuum that is growing there. It's a black hole. We hear that the Lord's in the heart, this is Svetadvip inside the heart. Surrounding that is darkness. Lord Shiva has two sides to his planet. One is the light side and one's the dark side. So we hear Sadashiva and we hear Rudra, the destroyer. Shiva itself means auspicious. So any instance is auspicious when you're thinking of Krishna and serving Krishna. There is no darkness at that point. However, when you're accessing your own desires, your own material desires, you have an expanse of darkness that gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Srila Prabhupada mentioned that out of the 100 years, once we reach the age of 50, we have a few good years after that. And then it's harder and harder to manifest your desires. That's because the potency that you have left, it has to go over the black hole in order to manifest your desire. Even to wake up and see the world around you as the same every day. It's your desire, so it takes a certain amount of life, a certain amount of energy. So as you get older and older, it's even difficult to walk up the stairs. You can't do anything at a certain point. And at that point, the life is not worth living. So Rudra comes along, takes away, and gives you a new lease of life in another birth. So the idea is, while you have life, you're supposed to use it to join in line with the desires of the Lord. As you go in line with the Lord's desires, you will have no darkness in your body. When you have no darkness, according to the amount of darkness, you'll take birth on a heavenly planet. The law of gravity, Einstein gave one understanding, Newton gave another. There are two more scientists who give two new ones, Eric Vander. He's mentioning that gravity is actually entropy, which means degradation in the universe. And there's another person called Dan Winter who's given understanding of gravity according to sacred geometry. So I've given understanding of gravity according to Srila Prabhupada's understanding. And I've mentioned that gravity is a thermodynamic activity. So at the top of the universe, we have absolute knowledge, which is manifest as a sun planet in our universe. From the sun planet, then we have a degradation of heat. And that heat was originally this Omkara, this Om. This is knowledge that is throughout the universe. It's compressed sound. As it cools, then you get the formation of different bodies. This is discussed in the Bhagavatam in great detail in three places. So, in relation to Sankhya Yoga. So this cooling of the universe, so to speak, it forms bodies. So in the sun planet, the beings have bodies of fire. When you come beneath the sun planet, you get to the heavenly planets, and there you see angels that are depicted with like a luminous, they've got light shining off them. So this is a degradation from fire. And it's mentioned that in the Mahabharata, when Arjuna was trying to conquer the 8 earthly Varshas, there are 9 in total, this one and 8 others on Jambudvip. Then he went and conquered a few of the Varshas, and then he went to one called Uttara Kuru Loka. On this place, he was turned back, And they said to him, just don't bother coming in. A voice came from the sky. And he asked, he said, I've come here to do battle, so I'm challenging you, because Yudhisthira should be accepted as the emperor of the whole earth. That means all of the earths, in order for him to perform the Rajasuriya sacrifice. They said to him, you won't even be able to see us. What to speak of fight with us? Your eyes can't detect us. All you'll see is light beings. You won't see anything else but light. Your weapons have no effect on us. So they gave him some dakshin and said, okay, you can go now. We accept Yudhisthira, no problem. So then he went back. So in certain heavenly varshas, they have bodies of light, luminous. Then as you go beneath the heavens, you have this antariksha. So there's the inner one, antariksha, and antariksha is the outer space. So this is a certain amount. And in this place, you have the ghosts that have discarnate bodies. So this is the ether, which is a sound vibration compressing as it cools, and it becomes outer space. And in this place, the beings don't have a body. And then sound vibration takes a different form. Then it becomes water. So after the outer space, also in outer space there is this Mount Meru is there. So there are different rakshasas and different demons live there, very powerful Danavas, etc., and demigods. They're all living together and they're fighting also. They're not so peaceful. They have their own zones, but they're also fighting with each other. Then you have the Earth planet, and on the Earth planet it said that our bodies are 83% made of water. This is molecular biologists will mention this. So you can argue that, it's okay. And then beneath the Earth planet, you have beings that have reptilian bodies, some kind of lizards, etc. They come. And then you also have another position where you have heavenly planets down there, Bilasvaga. Beneath that, again, this is all the cooling of air. If you understand the universe in terms of a thermodynamic, that means the heat exchange, the dynamics of heat exchange. And the second law of thermodynamics states that the universe goes from a state of greater organization to a state of less. So as time marches forwards, the universe becomes more and more entropic, more and more degraded. And that degradation is in relation to losing heat. In and of itself, an object never heats up. It always cools down. So this is the law within the universe. And this law, science has found, and it's never... all laws in science are updated. When they get more understanding, more technology, they review their findings, and if someone's got a better understanding, they take that option, and then they go further like this. So these laws, first two laws of thermodynamics, they've never, ever been challenged. They've never been changed. There's nothing can touch them because they're perfect. They're the laws that Krishna made. When the Lord created the universe, he created it as Chaitanya in the beginning. So we hear this Big Bang. This Big Bang states that the universe was created as perfect in the beginning. And from that point, degradation set in, and it began to expand, but it became more and more degraded. And it's eternally degrading. And our Shastra says the same thing. In the beginning was Chaitanya, was perfect consciousness. And then the Lord, he put false ego within the Mahatattva. As he put this false ego, this ignorance, from that point we have the second law of thermodynamics. So this law exists and we can't change it ever. And I based my understanding of gravity on the Bhagavatam, on Prabhupada's teachings, and on these first two laws of thermodynamics. So it's correct, and it actually encompasses all the other paradigms, Einstein's, Newton's, Dan Winter's, and Eric Vander's, all their understandings should be confirmed from the path of bhakti. As the universe is in three levels, so we have the bottom level is created. I can go back to this Kabbalistic path because they have a certain amount of information. And on this path, they say that the Lord created the world in three ways. The first way was according to numbers. The second was according to shapes. And the third was according to words. So this is the three levels. Bo, Buva, Svaha. So we find that material scientists, they're attempting to understand a unified field. So that means they're trying to find the root of all nature with mathematics, with calculus and numbers. So according to where we live in the bottom half of the universe. We live on the top part of the lower regions. So we actually belong to the demons. This earth planet is owned by those guys. Therefore, they're allowed to come and affect us as they do in Kali Yuga. According to the law of gravity, when there's more pious activity performed on the planet, it raises slightly. You know, when you have, say, a hot air balloon, and it's full of air, and then you heat that, the air, it heats up, and then it lifts the balloon up. So similarly, when pious activity like the Maha Mantra is chanted en masse on the planet lifts up slightly, and then we come in the proximity of demigods. So then the demigods take over, then you have Satyuga, Treta, and then it cools down, and then you have Dwapara and Kali. That's why in Dwapara, all the demons were coming here to populate the earth. And now in Kali, we see that they're actually controlling the earth. But them controlling the earth is good for us because it allows us to have peace on the planet. So those guys, they want to feed off the negative energy on the planet. It's said that the demigods feed off the pious activity. And there's mention of Indra when he committed an offense, he had to go in the water to hide from sin personified. And when he went in the water, it's said that he was starving to death. He had no food. So what was occurring was there was only Agnidev who knew where he was living at that time. He went completely incognito. He went in the water, in some lotuses. So Agnidev was scared to go in the water. So he went to the water, but because he had a body of fire, he was afraid of going in the water. So he brought Indra all his share of the yagyas, but Indra couldn't eat them. So he was starving, it's mentioned. So we understand from that story that the demigods feed off our pious credits. So when we're performing Harinam Sankirtan, the demigods are so pleased because they're actually getting their food. So they want more and more this Harinam Sankirtan to expand, and they're helping us as much as possible. On the other side, the demons, they feed off the low vibration energy. So this low vibration energy, it's some nefarious activity that goes on in Kali Yuga. That's okay, because what they do is they give modern technology, like 300 television channels and things like this, and MP3s, so that people can become doped up, and then they don't do anything too naughty. You know, then always there's some argumentation on the planet. There's always some war, some friction. So when the demons are controlling the planet, they just give everyone a sedative. So everyone's in this dozed condition. I was coming on the train with my wife, and I said, look, everybody's so peaceful around us. They've all got these MP3s on. Nobody talks to anyone. It's great, you know? So in that way, devotees can get on with their business. It's a very, very peaceful time on the earth planet. So while it's peaceful, we should make the most of it and do our business, which is to preach. Yeah, we're running out of time. I have unlimited amounts of information that could be spoken. But in relation to these three ways that the universe is created, according to numbers, and then according to shapes, and then according to words, there are three paths: Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. So the lower planetary system, this is in relation to Karma Yoga, or this M of Om, the M side of things. So it's okay for scientists to look for a unified field according to mathematics. It's actually correct. There is a unified field according to mathematics. And then, now they've almost found this with the latest findings of a person called Gareth Leasy. But what he's understood with his new E8 mathematics, he's understood that at the root of the atom, at the smallest particle possible, there is geometry, there are shapes. And he's astounded at the symmetry that's there at the root of the atom. There's so much beauty there. And this leads them, the scientists, to the next level of their conscious evolution. So the next level of their evolution is this level of the ether, this Akash, where they go up into the heavens to the eight heavenly lokas where Mount Meru is, etc., the earthly Varshas. So scientists are now, by their technology, getting some spaceships, etc., to go out. But as the intellect develops over time, if the compassion and the culture of a civilization, if that doesn't go hand in hand, then what happens is the protectors at a certain level, they do not allow people in. So because modern science is very demoniac and the people have a lot of aggression, they're not going to be allowed to go out into the stars. But they do understand that the next level of their conscious evolution is to do with the geometry of space. We speak about this in the second seminar. We were scheduled to give a seminar here for 6 hours, but nobody put their name down on the list. There's some list somewhere, so the lady cancelled it. So instead, I've been asked to go back to the Soho and give some seminars there. but briefly, we're running out of time now. If anyone's interested further in this subject matter, I've wrote a book called The Underlying Principle of Everything, which discusses these things and 100,000 million more other things. And it's all in relation to devotional service and chanting. I actually was wanting to speak about chanting today. I said to Govinda, let's read that verse and we'll speak about chanting. And I'm sorry that I went off track slightly. But maybe another time we can speak more on chanting, because it's really, really important to understand the scientific understanding behind what goes on with the mechanical process of chanting and how you can turn that into not mechanical, but according to the Raga Marg path. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that one should first have an understanding of the structure of the universe, this Virat Rupa form of the universe. And then, after you've understood this, you understand first in the Bhagavatam there's given the creation of the universe, and then it's talked about the structure according to atomic time, and then according to space, we learn the whole structure of the universe. Then we learn some of the kings who attained perfection within the universe, and only after 9 cantos of purification do we then get into the topics of Krishna. So in other words, we have to first have some respect for the Lord. So if you're talking about a path in Krishna Loka and you just take the Lord on any level, you don't have respect for the Lord, you'll make offenses. So first you have to see the Lord in the Vaikuntha mood. You have to see the Lord in this Virat Rup form. You have to get a clear understanding of the esoteric subject matters of the Bhagavatam. And then you can go deeper into Bhakti Yoga. So when we worship Radha and Krishna, we worship in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan with 16 items for the Lord's service. So this is important for devotees to understand. And to understand it is not a simple thing that can be discussed in Bhagavatam classes, because there is a time limit and everybody has service. It's more of a, few hours thing, and then it has to continue more and more and more. But I'm just mentioning it so that, for no reason whatsoever, actually. Anyway, it makes no difference, but you should be aware that there is a process we go through in Vaidhi Bhakti, and that process has got to take you somewhere. Bhakti Tirtha Swami once made a statement that if a devotee is not moving forwards sufficiently, then he'll move backwards. It's not possible to stay still in the material world, because everything is in flux, everything's going around the pole star by the Dakshinavarta wind, and entropy is always going backwards, pushing people. so you will go backwards if you're not going forwards. So as a devotee, we should be very careful of our activities. We should always try to give people the mercy. Let me speak briefly one thing about knowledge. when you try to attain knowledge in life, whether it's from the Bhagavatam or it's in relation to anything, that knowledge has a certain, if you take electricity and you start an electric loop and you have your power source, then you have all your power points everywhere. That power must be taken back in a loop back to the power source, otherwise it's not complete. There's a certain way that it has to be set up. So knowledge is set up the same in the universe. So if you attain knowledge and you don't give that knowledge out to others, then that knowledge stays inside you and it dries up. And that same knowledge, which is pure light, becomes darkness. And that becomes inertia, that becomes mass, and according to Einstein's understanding of gravity, that pulls you down. So you'll go lower, even though you're attaining knowledge. So as devotees, it's our duty to become a servant of knowledge. You become actually a vehicle for knowledge. Knowledge is masculine, and you must see yourself as feminine. If you see yourself as a masculine controller and enjoyer, then knowledge must become feminine in relation to you. Therefore, you must use knowledge for your own sense gratification. And at that time, there's a problem, because it's not Krishna conscious then. So you must become a servant of knowledge, and how you do that is to give knowledge to others. So in that way, we understand knowledge has a vocation. It has its own mission in life. And that vocation is that it wants to uplift everybody. There are things I could speak of why this is in relation to atomic time and greater time, but we've already spoke for over our time. So let's take prasad. Unless there's any questions, then I can answer.